The next sutta is on causes of action. It's having a reflection for the motivations for heedfulness. It's Anguttara 3, sutta number 33. There are, O monks, three causes for their origination of action. What three? Greed, hatred, and delusion. An action done in greed, born of greed, caused by greed, arisen from greed, will ripen wherever the individual is reborn. And wherever the action ripens, there the individual experiences the fruit of that action, be it in this life, or in the next life, or in subsequent future lives. An action done in hatred, born of hatred, caused by hatred, arisen from hatred, will ripen wherever the individual is reborn. And wherever the action ripens, there the individual experiences the fruit of that action, be it in this life, or in the next life, or in subsequent future lives. An action done in delusion, born of delusion, caused by delusion, arisen from delusion, will ripen wherever the individual is reborn. And wherever the action ripens, there the individual experiences the fruit of that action, be it in this life, or in the next life, or in subsequent future lives. It is, monks, as with seeds that are undamaged, not rotten, unspoiled by wind and sun, capable of sprouting and well embedded in a good field, sown in well-prepared soil. If there is plenty of rain, these seeds will grow, shoot up, and develop abundantly. Similarly, monks, whatever action is done out of greed, hatred, or delusion will ripen wherever the individual is reborn, and wherever the action ripens, there the individual experiences the fruit, be it in this life, or in the next life, or in subsequent future lives. These, monks, are three causes for the origination of action. There are, O monks, three other causes for the origination of action. What three? Non-greed, non-hatred, and non-delusion. If an action is done in non-greed, born of non-greed, caused by non-greed, arisen from non-greed, if an action is done in non-hatred, if an action is done in non-delusion, born of non-delusion, caused by non-delusion, arisen from non-delusion, once greed, hatred, and delusion have vanished, that action is thus abandoned, cut off at the root, made barren like a palm tree stump, obliterated so that it is no more subject to arise in the future. It is, monks, as with seeds that are undamaged, not rotten, unspoiled by wind and sun, capable of sprouting and well embedded. If a man were to burn them in fire and reduce them to ashes, then winnow the ashes in a strong wind, or let them be carried away by a swiftly flowing stream, then those seeds would have been radically destroyed, fully eliminated, made unable to sprout, and would not be liable to arise in the future. Similarly, it is, monks, with actions done in non-greed, non-hatred, and non-delusion, once greed, hatred, and delusion have vanished, these actions are thus abandoned, cut off at the root, made barren like a palm tree stump, obliterated so that they are no more subject to arise in the future. These, monks, are the other three causes for the origination of action. This next sutta is the Samyutta 46, sutta number 54. It's titled Accompanied by Loving Kindness. And it's a whole treatise on how to perfect the Brahma Viharas. On one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling among the Koliyans, where there was a town of the Koliyans named Halidavasana. Then in the morning, a number of bhikkhus dressed and taking their bowls and robes entered Halidavasana for alms. Then it occurred to them, "It is still too early to walk for alms in Halidavasana. Let us go to the park of the wanderers of other sects." Then those bhikkhus went to the park of the wanderers of other sects. They exchanged greetings with those wanderers, and when they had concluded their greetings and cordial talk, sat down to one side. The wanderers then said to them, "Friends, the ascetic Gotama teaches the Dhamma to his disciples thus. Come, bhikkhus, abandon the five hindrances, corruptions of the mind that weaken wisdom, and dwell pervading one quarter with a mind imbued with loving kindness. Likewise, the second quarter, the third quarter, and the fourth quarter, thus above, below, across, and everywhere, and to all as to oneself, dwell pervading the entire world with a mind imbued with loving kindness, vast, exalted, measureless, without hostility, without ill will. Dwell pervading one quarter with a mind imbued with compassion. Dwell pervading one quarter with a mind imbued with altruistic joy. Dwell pervading one quarter with a mind imbued with equanimity. Likewise, the second quarter, the third quarter, and the fourth quarter. Thus, above, below, across, and everywhere, and to all as to oneself, dwell pervading the entire world with a mind imbued with equanimity, vast, exalted, measureless, without hostility, and without ill will. We too, friends, teach the Dhamma to our disciples thus. Come, friends, abandon the five hindrances, and dwell pervading in the entire world with a mind imbued with loving kindness, compassion, altruistic joy, equanimity. Go through the whole thing again. So, friends, what here is the distinction, the disparity, the difference between the ascetic Gotama and us? That is, regarding the one Dhamma teaching and the other, regarding the one manner of instruction and the other. Then those bhikkhus neither delighted in nor rejected the statement of those wanderers. Without delighting in it, without rejecting it, they rose from their seats and left, thinking, "We shall learn the meaning of this statement in the presence of the Blessed One." Then when those bhikkhus had walked for alms in Halidavasana and had returned from the alms round, after their meal they approached the Blessed One. Having paid homage to him, they sat down to one side and reported to him the entire discussion between those wanderers and themselves. The Blessed One said, "Bhikkhus, when wanderers of other sects speak thus, they should be asked, 'Friends, how is the liberation of the mind by loving kindness developed? What does it have as its destination, its culmination, its fruit, its final goal? How is the liberation of the mind by compassion developed? What does it have as its destination, its culmination, its fruit, its final goal? How is the liberation of the mind by altruistic joy developed? What does it have as its destination, its culmination, its fruit, its final goal?'" "How is liberation of the mind by equanimity developed? What does it have as its destination, its culmination, its fruit, its final goal?" Being asked thus, those wanderers would not be able to reply, and further, they would meet with vexation. For what reason? Because that would not be within their domain. "I do not see anyone, bhikkhus, in this world with its devas, Mara, and Brahma, in this generation with its ascetics and Brahmins, its devas and humans, who could satisfy the mind with an answer to these questions, except the Tathagata or a disciple of the Tathagata, or one who has heard it from them. And how, bhikkhus, is the liberation of the mind by loving-kindness developed? What does it have as its destination, its culmination, its fruit, its final goal?" Here, bhikkhus, a bhikkhu develops the enlightenment factor of mindfulness accompanied by loving-kindness. The enlightenment factor of investigation of states accompanied by loving kindness. The enlightenment factor of effort accompanied by loving kindness. The enlightenment factor of joy. The enlightenment factor of joy accompanied by loving kindness. The enlightenment factor of tranquility accompanied by loving-kindness, the enlightenment factor of concentration accompanied by loving-kindness, the enlightenment factor of equanimity accompanied by loving-kindness, based upon seclusion, dispassion, and cessation, maturing in release. If he wishes, "May I dwell perceiving the repulsive in the unrepulsive," he dwells perceiving the repulsive therein. If he wishes, "May I dwell perceiving the unrepulsive in the repulsive," he dwells, perceiving the unrepulsive therein. If he wishes, may I dwell perceiving the repulsive in the repulsive and in the may I dwell perceiving the repulsive in the unrepulsive and in the repulsive, he dwells perceiving the repulsive therein. If he wishes, may I dwell perceiving the unrepulsive in the repulsive and in the unrepulsive, he dwells perceiving the unrepulsive therein. If he wishes, avoiding both the unrepulsive and the repulsive, may I dwell equanimously, mindful, and clearly comprehending. Then he dwells therein equanimously, mindful, and clearly comprehending. Or else he enters and dwells in the deliverance of the beautiful. Because the liberation of mind by loving-kindness has the beautiful as its culmination. I say for a wise bhikkhu here who has not penetrated to superior liberation. And how, bhikkhus, is the liberation of the mind by compassion developed? What does it have as its destination, its culmination, its fruit, its final goal? Here, bhikkhus, a bhikkhu develops the enlightenment factor of mindfulness, and through the seven factors of enlightenment, mindfulness, investigation of mind, effort, joy, tranquility, concentration, and equanimity. With all of those, each one accompanied, based upon seclusion, dispassion, cessation, maturing and release. And then if he wishes, with all those the different perceptions, able to establish those different perceptions. If he wishes, avoiding both the unrepulsive and the repulsive, may I dwell equanimously, mindful and clearly comprehending. Then he dwells therein, equanimously, mindful and clearly comprehending. Or else, with the complete transcendence of perceptions of forms, with the passing away of perceptions of sensory impingement, with non-attention to perceptions of diversity, aware that space is infinite, he enters and dwells in the base of the infinity of space. Because the liberation of mind by compassion has the base of the infinity of space as its culmination, I say, for a wise bhikkhu here who has not penetrated to a superior liberation. And how, bhikkhus, is the liberation of the mind by altruistic joy developed? What does it have as its destination, its culmination, its fruit, its final goal? Here, bhikkhus, a bhikkhu develops the enlightenment factor of mindfulness through to the enlightenment factor of equanimity, accompanied by altruistic joy, based upon seclusion, dispassion, and cessation, maturing in release. If he wishes, may I dwell perceiving the repulsive and the unrepulsive, and so on. If he wishes, avoiding both the unrepulsive and the repulsive, may I dwell equanimously, mindful, and clearly comprehending. Then he dwells therein, equanimously, mindful, and clearly comprehending. Or else, by completely transcending the base of the infinity of space, aware that consciousness is infinite, he enters and dwells in the base of the infinity of consciousness. Because the liberation of mind by altruistic joy has the base of the infinity of consciousness as its culmination, I say, for a wise bhikkhu here who has not penetrated to a superior liberation. And how, bhikkhus, is the liberation of the mind by equanimity developed? What does it have as its destination, its culmination, its fruit, its final goal? Here, bhikkhus, a bhikkhu develops the enlightenment factor of mindfulness, accompanied by equanimity, and through all of them, through to the enlightenment factor of equanimity, accompanied by equanimity, based upon seclusion, dispassion, and cessation, maturing and release. If he wishes, may I dwell perceiving the repulsive and the unrepulsive, so on. If he wishes, avoiding both the unrepulsive and the repulsive, may I dwell equanimously, mindful and clearly comprehending. Then he dwells therein equanimously, mindful and clearly comprehending. Or else, by completely transcending the base of the infinity of consciousness, aware that there is nothing, he enters and dwells in the base of nothingness. Because the liberation of mind by equanimity has the base of nothingness as its culmination, I say, for a wise bhikkhu here who has not penetrated to a superior liberation. So that's an extensive methodologies of developing the Brahma-viharas, but I think it's important, or interesting, of how it's tied together with the factors of enlightenment and then the those qualities of seclusion, dispassion, cessation, maturing in release, how they all tie together. It's the Subha Vimokha. So it's one of the Vimokhas, which are liberations, and it's where the mind is really taking delight in its object, really, and in that case being loving kindness, and but it might be in the. There wasn't a. I don't think there was a footnote on that. I'll take a look. To see if there was. Take a look. Well, certainly with that there is in terms of the at that moment, certainly it is, and that's what it. And he says, unless there's a that's what it its culmination. You know, unless it's somebody who has penetrated to a superior liberation, which would be Nibbana. And at that moment, then, of course, it's in abeyance, but would be able to be arise again. So there's a sub-commentary that has a Bhikkhu Bodhi, he says the sub-commentary is compelled to give a labored explanation of the puzzling stipulations made here about the upper limit of each meditation subject. He says, in brief, one who abides in loving kindness can easily apply his mind to a beautiful color kasina and quickly attain the beautiful liberation. That is jhana based on a colored kasina. Two, one who abides in compassion recognizes the danger in form and thus develops the base of the infinity of space, which is the escape from form. Three, one who abides in altruistic joy apprehends the joyful consciousness of beings and thus easily enters the base of the infinity of consciousness. And four, one who abides in equanimity is skilled in diverting his mind from pleasure and pain, and thus can easily divert it to the absence of any concrete entity in the base of nothingness. Well, a color, any color. Color. Like taking a color. And you know, certainly there are, you know, when one takes a color kasina and starts to absorb into it, that is one of the things that really happens, is when that just that it becomes sometimes just like heartbreakingly beautiful, the image, your mind just goes right into the color. Oh, yes.
That he was saying the result of full development of
Oh, I'm sure there's a commentary on it. I can assure you there will be some sort of commentary. But again, it's just taking, I guess, in and of itself. I mean, it's always going to have a limitation, but the and I think that's where the Buddha, that stipulation, unless there's a superior attainment, and all one does is basically take the say that concentration founded on loving kindness, or the mental state imbued with loving kindness, and recognize its impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, and non-self aspect. And boop, that gives a very different change. No, not a particular object, because it gets down to, when it gets so refined as that, then you're not really, perception and non-perception, you're not really holding an object here. That's more of a subjective, or the mental state itself is the object. Yeah. Perception of feeling cease. I mean, it doesn't cease really until the Nirodha Samapatti. Yes, for cessation of perception and feeling, so that feeling is present in all of the eight jhanas. It just gets more refined. I mean, your feeling, the feeling of pleasure and pain ceases, but that doesn't mean that there's not feeling. Okay, the next sutta is sort of on the various doors to the deathless, and having a few options. This is Majjhima 52, the man from Attakanagala. Thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Venerable Ananda was living at Belavagamaka, near Vaisali. Now, on that occasion, the householder Dasama of Attakanagala had arrived at Pataliputta for some business or other. Then he went to a certain bhikkhu in Kukutta's park, and after paying homage to him, he sat down to one side and asked him, "Where does the Venerable Ananda live now, Venerable Sir? I wish to see the Venerable Ananda." "The Venerable Ananda is living in Belavagamaka, near Vaisali, householder." When the householder Dasama had completed his business at Pataliputta, he went to the Venerable Ananda at Belavagamaka, near Vaisali. After paying homage to him, he sat down to one side and asked him, "Venerable Ananda, has any one thing been proclaimed by the Blessed One who knows and sees, accomplished and fully enlightened, wherein, if a bhikkhu abides diligent, ardent, and resolute, his unliberated mind comes to be liberated, his undestroyed taints come to be destroyed, and he attains the supreme security from bondage that he had not attained before?" "Yes, householder, one such thing has been proclaimed by the Blessed One." "What is that one thing, Venerable Ananda?" "Here, householder, quite secluded from sensual pleasures, secluded from unwholesome states, a bhikkhu enters upon and abides in the first jhana, which is accompanied by applied and sustained thought, with rapture and pleasure born of seclusion. He considers this and understands it thus. This first jhana is conditioned and volitionally produced. But whatever is conditioned and volitionally produced is impermanent, subject to cessation. Standing upon that, he attains the destruction of the taints. But if he does not attain the destruction of the taints, then because of that desire for the Dhamma, that delight in the Dhamma, with the destruction of the five lower fetters, he becomes one due to reappear spontaneously in the pure abodes, and there attain final Nibbana without ever returning from that world. This is one thing proclaimed by the Blessed One, who knows and sees, accomplished and fully enlightened, wherein, if a bhikkhu abides diligent, ardent, and resolute, his unliberated mind comes to be liberated, his undestroyed taints come to be destroyed, and he attains the supreme security from bondage that he had not attained before. Again, with the stilling of applied and sustained thought, a bhikkhu enters and abides in the second jhana. He considers this and understands it thus. This second jhana is conditioned and volitionally produced. But whatever is conditioned and volitionally produced is impermanent, subject to cessation. Standing upon that, he attains the destruction of the taints. But if he does not attain the destruction of the taints, because of that desire for the Dhamma, that delight in the Dhamma, with the destruction of the five lower fetters, he becomes one due to reappear spontaneously in the pure abodes, and there attain final Nibbana, without ever returning from that world. This too is one thing proclaimed by the Blessed One, wherein, if a bhikkhu abides diligent, ardent, and resolute, he attains the supreme security from bondage that he had not attained before. Again, with the fading away as well of rapture, a bhikkhu enters and abides in the third jhana. He considers this and understands it thus. This third jhana is conditioned and volitionally produced, but whatever is conditioned and volitionally produced is impermanent, subject to cessation. Standing upon that, he attains the destruction of the taints. But if he does not attain the destruction of the taints, he attains anagami. This too is one thing proclaimed by the Blessed One, wherein if a bhikkhu abides diligent, ardent, and resolute, he attains the supreme security from bondage that he had not attained before. Again, with the abandoning of pleasure and pain, a bhikkhu enters upon and abides in the fourth jhana. He considers this and understands it thus. This fourth jhana is conditioned and volitionally produced. But whatever is conditioned and volitionally produced is impermanent, subject to cessation. Standing upon that, he attains the destruction of the taints. But if he does not attain the destruction of the taints, he realizes anagami. This too is one thing proclaimed by the Blessed One, wherein if a bhikkhu abides diligent, ardent, and resolute, he attains the supreme security from bondage that he had not attained before. Again, a bhikkhu abides pervading one quarter with a mind imbued with loving kindness. Likewise the second, likewise the third, likewise the fourth. So above, below, around, and everywhere, and to all as to himself, he abides pervading the all-encompassing world with a mind imbued with loving-kindness, abundant, exalted, immeasurable, without hostility and without ill-will. He considers this and understands it thus. This deliverance of mind through loving-kindness is conditioned and volitionally produced. But whatever is conditioned and volitionally produced is impermanent, subject to cessation. Standing upon that, he attains the destruction of the taints. But if he does not attain the destruction of the taints, he realizes anagami. This too is one thing proclaimed by the Blessed One, wherein if a bhikkhu abides diligent, ardent, and resolute, he attains the supreme security from bondage that he had not attained before. Again, a bhikkhu abides pervading one quarter with a mind imbued with compassion. And through the sequence, he considers this and understands it thus. This deliverance of mind through compassion is conditioned and volitionally produced. But whatever is conditioned and volitionally produced is impermanent, subject to cessation. Standing upon that, he attains the destruction of the taints. But if he does not attain the destruction of the taints, he realizes anagami. This too is one thing proclaimed by the Blessed One, wherein, if a bhikkhu abides diligent, ardent, and resolute, he attains the supreme security from bondage that he had not attained before. Again, a bhikkhu abides pervading one quarter with a mind imbued with appreciative joy. He considers this and understands it thus. This deliverance of mind through appreciative joy is conditioned and volitionally produced. But whatever is conditioned and volitionally produced is impermanent, subject to cessation. Standing upon that, he attains the destruction of the taints. But if he does not attain the destruction of the taints, he realizes anagami. This too is one thing proclaimed by the Blessed One, wherein, if a bhikkhu abides diligent, ardent, and resolute, he attains the supreme security from bondage that he had not attained before. Again, a bhikkhu abides pervading one quarter with a mind imbued with equanimity. So he considers impermanence, and standing upon that, he attains the destruction of the taints. If not that, then anagami. This too is one thing proclaimed by the Blessed One, wherein, if a bhikkhu abides diligent, ardent, and resolute, he attains the supreme security from bondage that he had not attained before. Again, with the complete surmounting of perceptions of form, with the disappearance of perceptions of sensory impact, with non-attention to perceptions of diversity, aware that space is infinite, a bhikkhu enters upon and abides in the base of infinite space. He considers this and understands it thus. This attainment of the base of infinite space is conditioned and volitionally produced. But whatever is conditioned and volitionally produced is impermanent, subject to cessation. Standing upon that, he attains the destruction of the taints. But if he does not attain the destruction of the taints, he realizes anagami. This too is one thing proclaimed by the Blessed One, wherein, if a bhikkhu abides diligent, ardent, and resolute, he attains the supreme security from bondage that he had not attained before. Again, by completely surmounting the base of infinite space, aware that consciousness is infinite, a bhikkhu enters upon and abides in the base of infinite consciousness. He considers this and understands it thus. This attainment of the base of infinite consciousness is conditioned and volitionally produced. But whatever is conditioned and volitionally produced is impermanent, subject to cessation. Standing upon that, he attains the destruction of the taints. But if he does not attain the destruction of the taints, he realizes anagami. This too is one thing proclaimed by the Blessed One, wherein, if a bhikkhu abides diligent, ardent, and resolute, he attains the supreme security from bondage that he had not attained before. Again, by completely surmounting the base of infinite consciousness, aware that there is nothing, a bhikkhu enters upon and abides in the base of nothingness. He considers this and understands it thus. This attainment of the base of nothingness is conditioned and volitionally produced. But whatever is conditioned and volitionally produced is impermanent, subject to cessation. Standing upon that, he attains the destruction of the taints. But if he does not attain the destruction of the taints, then because of that desire for the Dhamma, that delight in the Dhamma, with the destruction of the five lower fetters, he becomes one due to reappear spontaneously in the pure abodes, and there attain final nibbana without ever returning from that world. This too is one thing proclaimed by the Blessed One who knows and sees, accomplished and fully enlightened, wherein, if a bhikkhu abides diligent, ardent, and resolute, his unliberated mind comes to be liberated. His undestroyed taints come to be destroyed, and he attains the supreme security of bondage that he had not attained before. When Venerable Ananda had spoken, the householder Dasam of Attaka Nagara said to him, Venerable Ananda, just as if a man seeking one entrance to a hidden treasure came all at once upon 11 entrances to a hidden treasure, so too, while I was seeking one door to the deathless, I have come all at once to hear of 11 doors to the deathless. Just as if a man had a house with 11 doors, and when that house caught on fire, he could flee to safety by any one of these 11 doors, so I can flee to safety by any one of these 11 doors to the deathless. Venerable sir, these sectarians will even seek a teacher's fee for their teachers. Why shouldn't I make an offering to the Venerable Ananda? Then the householder Dasama of Attaka Nagara assembled the Sangha of bhikkhus from Pataliputta and Vaisali, and with his own hands he served and satisfied them with various kinds of good food. He presented a pair of cloths to each bhikkhu, and he presented a triple road to the Venerable Ananda, and he had a dwelling worth 500 built for the Venerable Ananda. So 11 doors to the deathless. And in a sense, you notice that that it doesn't go to the cessation of neither perception or non-perception, because it's way too refined to be able to contemplate it. It's like you can't really contemplate impermanence without perception, right? Without some clarity of perception.
So Ajahn, is it my understanding that a vehicle like Anapanasati you would use to get to Ekjhana?
Well, Anapanasati, you'd need to be dropping the by the time you're getting even into fourth jhana, you're starting to drop the perception of the breath, and you're taking a more refined object. You're not really attending to the sensation of the breath. You're using the contemplation of at the point where you're taking an object, but at the point where you've been attending to the breath. So you're still using it as a vehicle, but the actual sensation has dropped away, and you've turned inward to an inner contemplation of the mind itself. Your jumping off spot is, yes, you jump off for the breath from there. And then it's also by holding to that point when the being impermanent, whatever, see, then you're there. You've got a place to come back to. Uh-huh.
After that point, to what degree are you to what degree are you tweaking, and to what degree is it just causing conditions?
Oh, you're still working, because you're working with attention, manasikara. You're not thinking, but you're directing attention. So that you're still working with, the mind is, it's just not, full blown thinking and that kind of reflect, but manasikara is, you're attending to things and you're directing attention, and you're cognizant of that, the result of that as well.
The first jhana is drawn from unwholesome states of mind. Does that mean that even in jhana, could you have little flashes of unwholesome states of mind, but not really necessarily disrupt the jhana?
No, it just doesn't arise, and that's sort of a characteristic of the as the mind goes into jhana, is that it is a completely wholesome state, and those factors of unwholesomeness don't arise, so that the mind is in a, it was very bright.
Thank you.
And so that I mean that is a say a distinctive characteristic, and it's also like the hindrances are in abeyance, and that's in terms of working with jhana and entering jhana. That's one of the character ways of working with attending to the hindrances to bring them into abeyance and to be able to drop them. So that sense of those sources of unwholesome mental states are brought to abeyance.